Only Because It's You by Rebecca Fiseha. Summary of Only Because It's You by Rebecca Fiseha. The accidental discovery and the engagement panic. The narrative of Only Because It's You begins in Augustan, Toronto, on a sweltering afternoon that sets the stage for a chaotic chain of events. The protagonist, Ms. Begashaw, a 34-year-old physiotherapist, is in her bedroom preparing for a run with her best friend, Amy. While rummaging through her one-night-stand, Daniel's gym bag looking for her borrowed AirPods, she discovers a small black velvet box. Inside is a 1-carat square-cut diamond engagement ring. Ms., who defines herself by her anti-marriage stance and her need-to-never-know basis relationship with her parents regarding her love life, is thrown into an immediate state of panic. She and Daniel have been in an on-again, off-again hookup arrangement for 2 years, and marriage has never been a topic of conversation. Ms.'s aversion to marriage is deeply rooted in her childhood. At 14, she was deported to Ethiopia by her mother, Janet, as punishment for dating a boy in Canada. During that trip, she met her father, Gashaw, for the first time and discovered that her parents were technically still married despite living on separate continents for decades. To avoid the catastrophic moment of a public proposal, Ms. decides she must break things off with Daniel immediately. She takes the ring with her on her run to show Amy, intending to return it to the bag later that night. However, the situation implodes when she returns home to find Daniel waiting at her kitchen island. Their interaction is interrupted by a phone call from Daniel's co-agent and mentor, Naomi, whose voice on speaker reveals a sexual side piece relationship with Daniel. Relieved to have a silver platter excuse for a breakup, Ms. feigns devastation and orders Daniel to leave. He departs abruptly, taking his gym bag but forgetting that Ms. still has the diamond ring tucked in her nightstand drawer, too. Pals break and the sponsorship crisis. Parallel to Ms.'s drama is the story of her lifelong friend, Kalkidan, Cal Legis. Cal is an Ethiopian immigrant who moved to Toronto 8 years prior to pursue acting, a career choice his family in Addis Ababa viewed as a coping mechanism for his devastating breakup with his first love, Muna. Cal has been an understudy for the role of Mark Antonian, a High Park production of Antony and Cleopatra. Cal's life reaches a peak when the lead actor, Grant, is injured in a car accident, and Cal is called up to perform the lead role for the remainder of the run. His performance is a triumph, fueled by the purging of his unresolved feelings for Muna. However, the glory is short-lived. Immediately after the closing night performance, the director, Oliver, informs Cal that the theatre board has decided not to proceed with his permanent residence sponsorship due to a lack of resources. With his work permit set to expire in 6 months, Cal faces the very real prospect of being forced to return to Ethiopia and abandon his dreams. 3. The bold strategy, finding a wife. Ms., witnessing Cal's hollow and small state after the sponsorship rejection, becomes obsessed with finding a way to keep him in Canada. She researches immigration laws and considers everything from graduate school to the U.S. green card lottery, but Cal rejects these as one in a million chances. Eventually, Ms. settles on the most practical, if ethically complex, solution, spousal sponsorship. Ms. initially plans to find a stranger to sign for Cal. With Amy's reluctant help, she embarks on a series of interviews with Ethiopian women in Toronto. The search is a disaster. Gelila, Gigi, looks and sounds exactly like Cal's ex, Muna, Khadija, a prepared foods lady from a local rabbi who demands a 10% deposit just to discuss the matter, Helena, an artist who cancels at the last minute, Nardos, a dental assistant who reveals she has done paper marriages before, which Ms. realizes would be a red flag for the government, Samri, flee the group interview at Sanremo Bakery in a state of confusion. In the aftermath of the failed interviews, Cal points out that such arrangements work best between people who already know and trust each other. In a moment of mutual vulnerability and monumental tension, Ms. asks, "Why won't you let me sign for you?" They agree to the arrangement, acknowledging their 2 decades of friendship and deep mutual trust. IV. The Toronto wedding, a fraudulent I do. On October 1, Ms. and Cal enter into the marriage of convenience at Toronto City Hall. Ms., despite her anti-marriage stance, wears a borrowed white wedding dress, formerly belonging to her friend Sosina, and a veil. Cal wears a plain black suit and brings a bouquet of roses. Their witnesses are Silvio, Cal's roommate, and Amy. The ceremony is a blur of stilted, scripted vows and a missable peck on the lips that Ms. initiates to satisfy the application requirements. Afterward, the group has a celebratory lunch where the line between fake and real begins to blur. Aimee toasts to the fact that Cal has finally made Miz take a break from dating. Though Miz maintains the hubby-wifey concept is strictly paper-based, her internal alarm bells go off when Cal suggests that being attached might be exactly what he needs to start dating again. Rebuilding a life, the red binder and the mattress. The months following the wedding are dedicated to building a proofs of relationship file, organized into a red 4-inch binder. They spend time at Miz's apartment filling out form IMM5532, relationship information and sponsorship evaluation, recounting their first meeting in Addis Ababa in 1996. As a small way of saying I appreciate you, Cal surprises Miz by having a luxury mattress delivered to her apartment, replacing the ancient, back pain-inducing one she had slept on for years. He explains that the sales guy promised every sleep would be like an 8-hour massage. Their relationship shifts from project partners to something more intimate during a romantic photo tour of Toronto. They visit locations like Ripley's Aquarium, the CN Tower, and the Humber Bay Arch Bridge to create a photographic history for the government. On the bridge, at the insistence of a passerby, they share a second kiss, this one, silky soft, and filled with a warmth that leaves Miz's heart on the edge of exploding. This intimacy culminates when Cal stays over at Miz's to try out the new mattress. They become physically involved, and Cal confesses, I love you, so much, Nefse, my soul, Vi. Crossing borders, the return to Addis Ababa. The application is sent off just before they fly to Ethiopia in January. For Cal's parents' 48th wedding anniversary, the trip is freighted with tension. Cal has begun calling Miz his wife in public to the Uber driver, to airline staff, and to his family, which causes Miz deep unease. She worries that he is becoming dreamy and forgetting the terms of their arrangement. The landing in Addis is an emotional homecoming for both. Cal is met by a massive crowd of relatives at the airport, while Miz is struck by the sepia glow of the mountains. During a feast at the Legis Villa, Cal's father, Abay, makes a shocking public announcement. Because Abay and his late wife never had a proper wedding celebration, he wants Cal and Miz to stand alongside him on Saturday for a double grace celebration. Miz, trapped by the family's delusional joy, finds herself unable to say no and instead smiles and nods while panicking internally. 7. The parent trap, Hotel Mirages. While Cal is occupied with family, wedding matters, Miz spends her days with her mother, Janet, who has been delayed in Addis for weeks. The core of Miz's world is shaken when she spots her father, Gashaw, in the lobby of the Alili Hotel, same hotel where her mother is staying. Suspecting a rendezvous, Miz follows her father and enters her mother's room, only to find her parents shacked up together in a hotel room affair. They are both wearing their wedding rings. In a tearful confrontation, her parents admit that they married too soon and just let each other go because of the difficulties of getting exit visas 30 years ago. They tell Miz they are so proud of her for not getting married, believing her independence is a sign of wisdom they lacked. This irony is almost too much for Miz to bear, as she is currently pretending to be married while her parents have been pretending to be separated for 3 decades. 8. The fracture, a coffeehouse rejection. The morning of the planned celebration in Ethiopia, Miz reaches her breaking point. She realizes she cannot go through with the charade of a public wedding alongside Cal's parents, whose love she views as a timeless, spaceless bond she hasn't earned. She summons Cal to a cafe and delivers a murderous rejection. She tells him, I am not your wife. I can't do today. She accuses him of manipulating her with his family's expectations. Cal, who had spent the week hoping Miz was catching up to his real romantic feelings, is devastated and furious. He characterizes her as a sulky, spoiled brat who uses crying to get her way. Miz boards the flight back to Toronto alone, while Cal petulantly upgrades to business class to avoid her for the 16-hour journey. X. The Cold War and the Red Ring. Back in Toronto, they enter a period of cold silence. Miz is nursing a hairline fracture in her ankle from a running accident, and she feels a sinkhole of sadness over the lost friendship with Cal. The Daniel Ring plotline finally reaches its conclusion when Daniel barges into Miz's apartment with the help of the concierge, Everest. In a humiliating scene, Daniel rummages through her nightstand, dumping her collection of sex toys onto the floor to retrieve the diamond ring. Cal arrives at the same moment, carrying a bag of love limes, and witnesses the scene. A heated argument ensues where Cal questions Miz's loyalty. Miz fires back, telling him his perfect mom would never understand her, causing Cal to storm out once again. X. The final reckoning, the immigration interview. The climax of the novel occurs at the Service Canada Centre. For their immigration interview, after weeks of not speaking, they arrive separately, looking detached and robotic. The officer, sensing their tension, grills Cal on why he waited so long to propose and whether Miz was merely backup insurance. Miz decides that truth is the only way to salvage our relationship. She admits to the officer that she never thought of marriage and that she wanted to take our time and just date. Cal, moved by her honesty, corroborates the story, admitting he was so hurt at first, but that they eventually chose to enjoy being together without pressure. In a surprising turn, the officer reveals himself to be a fan of the theater and asks Cal about his role as Mark Antony. The interview ends on a high note, with the officer promising to give their case a lot of thought. Outside, Miz and Cal finally reconcile, realizing that they have rescinded the proposal. In a way that allows them to start over as a real couple, conclusion and the final approval. The novel concludes with a first date at the Rabba, the location where they first reconnected years earlier. While standing at the cash register, Cal checks his email and finds the official notification, the sponsorship has been approved. In the epilogue, set 1 year later, Cal is officially a landed, permanent resident. Miz's projects are all successful, her parents are living together in Ethiopia, and Aimee is a professional running coach. On a romantic trip to Niagara Falls, Miz finally asks Cal to order custom-made rings from Teklu Desta, signifying that she is ready for a real marriage. Cal's response is the final line of the book, "I thought you'd never ask." This summary is for educational purposes only. This audio is exclusively created for AfriNovels.com. Thank you.